From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, we're going to feature a conversation about citizen diplomacy with Laura Dupuy, Executive Director of the Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy. We'll hear about the connections that are established between Utah and the world by this local international program.
We are able to sit right here in the comfort of beautiful Salt Lake City, welcome those from around the world, and really see what is happening on the ground. What are the challenges that they're facing?
Plus, we'll talk about political forecasting during our political cornflakes segment with Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr. All that, your top local headlines, and more coming up just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And welcome back to The Rundown. As I said, we'll have a conversation in just a few minutes about public diplomacy. But first up, we have these headlines. State officials say Utah unemployment figures ticked down to 3.5% in September. Numbers released Friday by the Department of Workforce Services are down from August, when the state reported a 3.6% jobless rate. Utah stands well below the national September rate of 5.9%. The report says Utah's economy added 47,600 jobs in the past year. The fastest growing sector was construction, which grew 11.8%. Information industries grew by 6.5%. Meanwhile, an estimated 51,000 people in Utah were actively looking for jobs last month. Five Southern Utah men are pleading not guilty to federal charges in connection with an ATV protest ride that organizers said was designed to draw attention to the U.S. government's overreaching control of public lands. They are facing misdemeanor charges in the May ride through southeastern Utah's Recapture Canyon that illustrated growing tensions between Western residents and the Bureau of Land Management. Prosecutors say citizens have a right to express their opinions, but riding through the closed canyon that's home to ancient dwellings was illegal. One defense attorney says the men simply want to enjoy the great outdoors near their homes. San Juan County Commissioner Phil Lyman and four others were released after entering not guilty pleas at their first appearance in federal court on Friday. A trial was set for December 22nd. And finally today, a video showing women in bikinis shooting high-powered weapons and riding in tanks alongside several uniformed officers has triggered an investigation by the Utah National Guard to determine if military equipment and facilities were used in the promotional video. The Utah Department of Public Safety is also looking into the video, which officials say appears to feature two of their officers wearing state uniforms. Both agencies say they believe the promotional video for a calendar was shot at a private gun range west of Salt Lake City. The National Guard and public safety officials said in statements that the video goes against their values and those of Utah residents. The England-based company Hot Shots Calendar that produced the video wasn't immediately available for comment. Those are our top local headlines today. I'm Roger McDonough. We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Election Day is 18 days away, and things don't seem to be looking so good for Democrats. For some predictions about what's going to happen in this upcoming election, I'm joined now by Thomas Burr, Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune and author of Political Cornflakes, a daily online roundup of Utah politics. So, Thomas, any predictions?
Yeah, it's not going to be a good year for Democrats. This seems pretty clear so far. Midterm elections are always tough for the party that controls the White House. And with President Obama's poll numbers tanking and the country still trying to build back from the Great Recession, it's not a good time for the D's. Political forecasters are saying there's a pretty good chance Republicans are win enough seats to take back the Senate. I think Nate Silver's 538 blog put it at 60.8% that'll happen.
Wow.
On the House side, it looks like the GOP could pad its majority by picking up several seats currently held by Democrats. If they're all right, Obama could face a Congress run by Republicans, and that's not going to be easy for his final 2 years.
No, it wouldn't be. Just out of curiosity, Thomas, how does that bode for House races here in Utah?
Well, it's good for the Republicans, we can say that. Several forecasts right now are showing Mia Love will win the 4th Congressional District over Doug Owens. And Representatives Rob Bishop, Jason Chaffetz, and Chris Stewart will keep their jobs. The incumbent Republicans have, of course, solidly Republican districts. They haven't made any major gaffes. it seems so far. So they have a pretty good shot, just, you know, keeping their titles and coming back to Washington. Owens has certainly tried his best to compete against Love, but again, it's a Republican majority district in a difficult year. And Love had a head start. She, you know, a name recognition from when she tried to, you know, beat Jim Matheson in 2012. And Matheson, if you recall, only won by like 800 votes in that race.
I do remember that. And actually, I'm wondering if the opposite might be a little bit true, that this race is shaping up to be a little bit more competitive than some originally had thought. I mean, was the first thinking that Love was going to kind of blow it out of the water?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and we really don't know. I mean, there's obviously going to be a certain amount of Democrats and a certain amount of Republicans who will vote for their party in any district. And Owens certainly, you know, he's been up on air. He's spent money. He's certainly trying. They had their debate this week. I think last poll showed he was within about 9 points. That was the Utah policy poll, about 9 points behind Mia Love. Right. And maybe it's going to be maybe it'll get closer as we get closer to the election. We're not sure.
All right, well, you never know. Finally, speaking of Mia Love, she raised an astonishing $1.4 million in the last 3 months. How does that compare when looking at other candidates?
It really is astonishing. It's a lot of money in 3 months. That she raised five times that of what Owens raised in the last quarter. And overall, she spent nearly 10 times what he has in the race because she's so flush with cash. Wow. It's fairly easy to say she set a record in Utah House races with that fundraising haul. And she's a superstar when it comes to raising cash. She's got a big national following, and as we noted in the Tribune, she raised a ton of money in small dollar amounts from across the country. She's got a great mailing list, a great email list to reach out to. Owens has spent about $400,000 so far trying to get to a winnable spot, but it's still tough when your opponent has that big bankroll.
Right.
The other incumbents seem to be sitting on a pile of cash too. Chaffetz has $300,000 in the bank. Stewart has about the same. Bishop has $123,000 on hand. I should note that one of the more interesting things that came out of this week's financial filings, State Senator Luz Robles, who's running against Stewart in the second district, spent nothing in the last 3 months of the campaign.
Wow.
Zero. We know she's about to give birth in the next, couple months, but it's still almost unheard of to spend nothing in the final months of the campaign.
Is that, is there a certain amount of concession there? I mean, this money, generally, we're talking about advertising spending here, correct?
Yeah, and that's a difficult, difficult race still, but I'm not sure. Maybe they decided they didn't want to do direct mail or go on TV or do telephone calls. Maybe they're saving it all for the last couple weeks of the campaign push. I'm not sure, but it was something I hadn't seen for a long time.
You mentioned the amazing email list that Mia Love has. How do candidates build that kind of a following? I mean, is Mia Love just benefiting from the fact that she had such a contentious race against Jim Matheson and that was watched at the national level?
There's a lot of different ways you can build email lists. So, I'm sure that some of it came from just, people going to her website, from the last campaign and signing up, and, they grab email addresses from, the Utah Republican Party. There's also lists you can buy out there that you say, okay, I want to grab Alan West's email list, and you pay him X amount of money to use his email list, or you have vendors that will sell you, this is a conservative block email for 50,000 people that they've grabbed from, a site like Town Hall or the Daily Beast or something like that, where they've got the built-in email list. So there's ways to rent them, to buy them, and just build them yourself. And I'm sure she's done all of that.
Wow. Well, sophisticated political campaign running is sort of the nature of the game. I mean, you're citing Nate Silver, a really interesting look at stats in politics, not looking good for the Democrats this year.
No, but it is really interesting to see how this, the new technology plays into all this stuff. I mean, it used to be, we'll see what candidate comes out on top, and now we can almost predict with, 18 days to go where everything's going to end up.
Right. And we don't have any hanging bits or, hanging pixels.
Check.
Or,
yeah.
I'm trying to come up with an alternative now, the digital alternative.
Bits, I like it.
Well, Thomas Burr, Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune, as always, thank you for filling us in.
Thanks, Roger.
I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Now on the program, we're joined in studio by Laura Dupuy, Executive Director of the Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy, a group that aims to foster global understanding and respect between Utahns and people from around the world. The organization works to bring international delegations to Utah for an exchange of ideas and culture, to learn from professional peers, and to forge deeper bonds that span borders. Laura Dupuy, thank you very much for being here today.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Your organization is one of a few similar organizations across our country working to build ties and understanding about the wide world of countries and cultures that are out there. I think a lot of our listeners won't understand what this work actually entails, and so I'm hoping you can enlighten us. How is your work on so-called citizen diplomacy carried out?
That's a big question, but I'll begin by saying I'm really proud that we are one of 94 organizations across the nation who are working in this particular program and for this initiative. And there are hundreds of organizations worldwide that are promoting citizen diplomacy. And that is the idea that we as individuals, citizens, have the right and even the responsibility to help shape our U.S. foreign relations one handshake at a time. Citizen diplomacy is part of what we call our overall broad public diplomacy initiatives. And that means that this is not generated by government or public policy, but is really the individual citizen engaging to help create dialogue, understanding, and to promote peace person to person.
You know, I was going to go into the sort of nuts and bolts of it, but I want to address another point, which is that diplomacy can, in some circles, mean different things. It's often, though, defined in counter to the use of hard power of military force. Is there kind of an implicit peacekeeping mission going on, or is that maybe overstating it a little bit?
No, I would agree wholeheartedly. I think all of us who are drawn to this work are really motivated by a deep-seated belief that person-to-person, face-to-face meetings are the best ways to create understanding, to alleviate conflict and misunderstanding, and it's a critical part to our broader peacekeeping efforts across the world.
Another definition of diplomacy is the idea of extending, you know, a country's own interests in the world. And is that maybe implicit also how America is viewed, or maybe changing the way that America is viewed in the world?
That's really interesting. I was thinking about this on my way over here, and I was realizing that in my own role as a citizen diplomat, I don't promote American values, but what I do is try and share and explain. And so it's not a nation-building effort or anything of that nature, but in turn, in this context, I have the opportunity to ask those same questions and to learn the same from those that I'm interacting with from around the world.
All right. And the way that that happens, I want to get kind of to the nuts and bolts of this. You coordinate closely with the State Department, and they, if I'm understanding correctly, actually identify who's going to come here, who the delegates coming from around the world are. How does that actually work?
Yeah. This is just one of the most fantastic programs that we have in our U.S. diplomacy tools. We work as a private sector partner with the U.S. Department of State, the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. And during the height of the Cold War, Congress passed an act called the Fulbright-Hays Act that created the Fulbright Scholarship Program and a number of other person-to-person type programs like Friendship for Sister Cities, but they also created the International Visitor Leadership Program, and this is our flagship program. Congress appropriates funds every year to Department of State for our public diplomacy initiatives, and our embassies are charged with identifying key emerging leaders to come as guests of our government to the U.S. for a short-term, three-week professional and cultural exchange program. Our job here on the ground is to match them with their professional counterparts, to exchange best practices, ideas, to network, and hopefully to build long-term relationships that are mutually beneficial.
You know, I want to talk about that relationship building from a more personal perspective in a minute, but before we get there, I'm kind of curious who gets involved in this work And maybe you could tell us some of the kind of notable alumni from this program.
It's really fascinating. First of all, we welcome international leaders from over 100 countries here every year on the program. And we have over 400 that we bring right here to Utah. They are coming from a broad cross-section of the public sector, elected officials, and they're examining issues. And I'll just read off a couple of the program themes that we've done over the last year.
Sure.
We've hosted visitors from Korea examining issues related to cybersecurity. We've had a group here looking at 21st century public health challenges, diabetes, cancer, heart disease, programs related to human and civil rights protections of minority communities, interfaith dialogue. It's really quite fascinating. So these are individuals who have been identified as those key leaders around the world. And some of the notable alumni, if we go back to the beginning of the program, include Indira Gandhi, Anwar Sadat, Margaret Thatcher, Tony Blair, Gerhard Schroeder, the current president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff, is an alum. There are currently over 55 acting heads of state who are alumni of this program. We believe this is a very, very strong and powerful way that we can build positive relations at the government-to-government level, as well as the citizen-to-citizen level.
You know, these are emerging leaders that have been recognized by I guess, embassies in foreign countries. Do you have any sense of what the sort of criteria that those embassy staff are using to select and find these emerging leaders to bring them here?
Yeah, there's actually very clear-cut program objectives as part of the selection process. And we actually have staff in each of our embassies whose job it is to just identify these individuals. But the President and Secretary of State will identify these key program themes and who are those who are currently working in that society that are making a difference. And so the criteria is extremely rigid and extremely high level. And so it is a complicated process, and everyone who comes is truly a notable leader in their own right.
Mm. I'm wondering what a kind of sample itinerary might look like. They come here to Salt Lake City because there is a chapter here. How many, if you can remind us, how many chapters there are around the United States? And are they just visiting individual chapters? Are they moving between them?
Yeah, when they come on their program, their first stop is Washington, D.C., where they get a overview of our nation's capital, and they get a federalism tour. They get a whole overview. And then they travel to three other cities around the country. We are one of 94 councils around the country. And so if you go to Dallas or Fort Worth or Des Moines, you will find our sister organizations doing the same work right there.
You know, one of the reasons that we wanted to have this conversation was because recently the Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy facilitated a meeting here at KCPW between a delegation of visiting journalists from West Africa and our staff. And it ended up being a really long and fascinating conversation about election coverage in a variety of countries, about ethics in government, about access to elected officials, about fairness rules. And one of the more interesting exchanges I think that any of us here had ever had. And in some ways, we could think of these exchanges as benefiting that visiting delegation from West Africa. But, and this is going to seem really simple maybe, but it benefits the community here as well, or at least it would seem so to us, that we took away as much from it, I think, as those delegates did. Is that sort of part of the mission? And how else does the local community, that you know, the sort of host community, Salt Lake City, benefit from this program?
Wow, thank you so much for that. I have a huge smile on my face because what you said just made me tingle all over. This is exactly what this program is about. It is a mutually beneficial program. Not only did those journalists from West Africa learn from you, there's so many parts of the world where freedom of speech is simply not a part of that culture.
Yeah.
For us to be able to bring journalists from around the world to meet with people like you, Roger, and your staff is just an extraordinary opportunity for them to get seeds planted of what they can do in their professional careers back home. But on the other hand, we are able to sit right here in the comfort of beautiful Salt Lake City, welcome those from around the world, and really see what is happening on the ground? What are the challenges that they're facing? I'll never forget a journalist that we had from Afghanistan, Miriam Durrani, who had been listed as a 2012, one of the top 100 leaders in their 100 leaders issue. But she was a journalist doing a women's only radio program in station in Kabul. And she faced tremendous danger just going to work. It just gave a face on what is happening around the world. And it makes me so much more compassionate, understanding, and curious. So it benefits every one of our professional resources, like yourself, who meet with our visitors. And just to give you a sample, when they're here for 3 to 5 days. It just depends on the scheduling. And their time will be spent. We arrange the appointments with people like yourself. I'm looking at another program here, and this group came to KCPW. Again, this was back in 2013. They then went up and had meetings with legislatures at the Utah at the Capitol. Right. We had them meeting with one of our congressmen. Then they visited a school. They love to see what an American school is like and talk to kids. Then they went to one of our local nonprofit organizations that promote environmental issues and toured one of our TV stations. They met up with the Hinckley Institute of Politics, went to Salt Lake City Green, and then visited a farm. Wow. So the scope and range of all of our programs is very broad. But the other part that we love is just to promote Utah. I mean, we are such a fantastic destination. So they get to do cultural activities. They love to go to Park City and, and tour Main Street. They love to visit Temple Square. They often visit the Mormon Tabernacle Choir broadcast on Sunday mornings or the choir rehearsal. Love to go to our museums. It's just a fantastic opportunity for them to leave. And then it's really part of our state outreach. We have world leaders who have come here on the program. And should the opportunity arise that a decision needs to be made about an economic or political development that Utah's part of, they will remember fondly their time here.
Right. And in terms of how these interactions occur, I know that you have a program that actually where people can invite these visitors to their homes for dinner, people who are involved in the Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy. Is that right?
This is one of actually the most important aspects of the program. And that's the opportunity for our members to invite the visitors to their home so that they can see a typical American home, taste some local cuisine, and just have a very informal conversation. It's not a state dinner. Our members don't have to pull out the china, but it can be a barbecue or it can include kids and neighbors. But it's really that real personal touch that's so important to building relationships.
I'm looking at our clock and I'm realizing that we've got a kind of I have more questions for you. I'm curious about a few more things. We don't have much time. How long has the Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy been doing this? I mean, does it originate at the same time that you had the Fulbright development, or is it later than that, UCCDs?
Just a little bit later. The work was being done informally, but we became a nonprofit in 1967.
And then how does the funding for both the work that you do with delegates and for other events, I know that you have a lecture series, which we'll talk about in just a moment, where does that funding come from?
We get a third of our operating budget from a grant from the Department of State based upon the number of visitors and programs we do each year. We also have a number of key sponsors. Westminster College is our home, and they provide us donated office space. We're also a recipient of funds from the Utah State Legislature and other foundations and individuals.
Okay. And then, as I just mentioned, I know that you guys have a lecture series underway, and it's on foreign policy. Tell us about the lecture series, and maybe you could highlight a couple of the guests that are coming for our listeners to understand what this is. And also, is this an ongoing series that happens year after year, and is it always foreign policy? Maybe give us that insight as well.
We're in our eighth year of the Ambassador John Price and Marcia Price World Affairs Lecture Series. We have six lectures a year, and we have some very exciting things on the roster coming up. So, first of all of our lectures are free and open to the public. They are held in the evening on the campus of Westminster College. On Tuesday, October 21st, I'd love to invite your listeners to join us for Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security, Rose Gottmuller, who will be talking about nuclear weapons in the 21st century. She's also an expert in the situation in Russia, Ukraine. It's going to be fascinating. Wow. And then coming up in November, Erica George is an attorney here at the University of Utah, and she is going to be examining issues related to the human costs and rights consequences of trafficking.
All right, so a couple of really interesting lectures coming up. How long does it run for this year, that lecture series?
It'll run through March of next year.
Wow. Maybe a listener wants to better understand how they can gain that kind of global perspective. How can someone find out more about becoming part of the Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy, but also about this lecture series as well?
Well, our lecture series is free and open to the community. We find it's a fantastic networking opportunity for all of us interested in international. You can simply visit our website at utahdiplomacy.org. Sign up as a member. Membership is free, and you'll receive our bi-monthly newsletter that will give you information about our upcoming programs.
Laura Dupuy is the Executive Director of the Utah Council for Citizen Diplomacy, based here in Salt Lake City, that brings visiting delegations in from around the world. Really interesting work you're doing. Thanks for coming in and sharing this this story with us.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Roger McDonough. You're tuned into The Rundown. We'll be right back. Thanks again for tuning into The Rundown this afternoon. Our show today was produced by yours truly, with additional help from Ross Chambliss, Ryan Cunningham, and news intern Mycel Spotted Elk. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tune in each weekday at 5 for an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you on The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned next for the Utah Business Report and Marketplace.